clean phone line, so we can begin.
Okay.
Okay, tape is rolling now. You've read the Mark Hertzgaard article. Do you think that the information in it was accurate?
I thought there were elements of it that were accurate, certainly. And let me tell you this, Mark Hertzgaard is a very fine journalist and a very promising one, a young man. I had two, as he knows, I had two objections to the article. One is I think that it vastly inflated my importance in the universe in terms of what I did there. There was a team of people who were very effective in that White House, I think, in working with the president on communications issues. Jim Baker, Mike Devers, a whole slew of people there who've been very good. Secondly, I thought it overstated the case with regard to the journalists. So the essence of the article, as you know, is that the journalists were seduced by the Reagan White House. I don't think history will prove that to be the case. The journalists are quite aware of what's going on. They have they've been very. I think that there have been times where they've been tough on Reagan, as a lot of studies have shown. I think they've been fairly objective in many instances, but I definitely don't think that they've been seduced.
The tone of Hertzgaard's piece is that the White House manipulates the news, manipulates the president and the press, and therefore manipulates the American public. Do you think that presidential public relations ever gets to the point of actually manipulating the American public and distorting the news?
Well, the word manipulation is loosely used by a lot of people to describe a process which has is essentially one in which the government tries to get its version of the facts and a story into print and into television, along with the other versions that go in there. There is a process every day, and with a candidate or with, such as Mr. Mondale or Mr. Reagan, or with the White House or with the Congress or congressional office or congressional committee, wherein people are trying to tell the press, look, you know, this is the way we see it, and this is what we are trying to accomplish. Now, the press at that point, you know, has one version of reality. They then obviously are under an obligation to go out and find other versions of reality and to print those. But what the White House does not want to do is to wind up not seeing its version of reality in print, because then it really isn't communicating and reaching the public. I mean, the press does, in effect, serve as a filter, and it's important to govern effectively for the message of the person who's trying to govern to get out.
So it's the White House's job to present a favorable image of reality and the press's job to find other versions and to question what's being presented?
I think it's the White House's job, first and foremost, to tell the truth. And if there's unflattering truth, that has to be told. But there is also an advocacy job when it comes to, say, presidential policies. If the president believes that a particular program ought to be reformed, let's take student loans. When Reagan came into office, there were students in this country whose parents were making $100,000 or above who qualified for assistance from the federal government. Reagan believed that that was unjustified, that families making $100,000 a year ought not to be subsidized by the government. He then proposed to cut the loans down, the loans and grants down, so that essentially they were much more limited to people below, say, $30,000 a year. So you cut out a lot of the upper middle class, and to some degree the middle class got a little, some reductions in terms of they went from grants to loans. Now, if you simply announce that we're going to cut the loan program and that's the only fact that gets out, it looks like you're taking a swat at everybody. But if the administration obviously in that situation is going to try to say, well, look, here's why we're doing it. Now, that's an advocacy of a cut. I think that's totally justified in what you ought to do in the White House. The reporters ought to then turn around and say, well, but is anybody else getting hurt? Is anybody else going to lose benefits? What's it going to mean to the person who's making $28,000, who comes from a family of $28,000? Does this mean a lot of black kids are not going to be able to go to college? The White House shouldn't lie about that, but sometimes the White House is not necessarily going to put out every single fact. You're not going to find that in any White House. That's been true from time immemorial.
Hertzgaard refers to something as the line of the day, where every day
Sure. Everyone
in the White House was apprised of what issue was going to be discussed that day and what the line of that issue was. Is that how it was called in the White House? Was it called the line of the day?
Yeah, it's been called line of the day before this White House, too. It goes back some years. The idea is, look, how does a president reach the public about what it is he is trying to accomplish? If he simply is a creature of whatever the press wants to print every day, and doesn't have any sort of plan of what it is he wants to communicate, he's going to have a mishmash. he's going to have a situation in which people can't figure out what the devil he's up to. They don't know what his goals are, they don't know what his programs are, and they don't know what he believes. It's important, in order to get a message out, is to think carefully each day what that message ought to be, and then try to get it out. Now, the message may be wrong, people have a chance to reject it, but the art of governing is, to a very large degree, the art of persuasion. A president has to, in order to be able to lead, has to persuade, and that is what this, one of the activities and functions of a White House staff. You can call that manipulation, you can call it a lot of other derogatory things, but it is, the, at essence, and the central question is, how can our presidents best lead? Now, it is one thing if you've got a government that lies about Vietnam or lies about Watergate. That is, I think, terribly destructive and deserves to be condemned. It is quite another to have a government that tries to govern through communication and through persuasion. I think that there's an entirely separate question of whether Reagan is too protected, he doesn't answer enough questions, or if there's too many balloons and hoopla. I think that's a totally separate question from the one of the need of an effective White House to get a message out about what the president is trying to do.
Well, let's get to the question that you just brought up, because you said that one of the goals of important public relations is to let the public know what it is that the president believes. But many members of the Washington Press Corps have been critical of the current White House for not giving enough access to the president. So instead of the public directly finding out what the president believes, they're finding out instead about directives that have been issued through the White House. Do you think that this White House has limited press access to the president?
I think there have been times when the president, it would have been helpful if the president met more regularly with the press. I believe, and I've said so publicly, I've said so privately in the White House, that everyone would be better served if the president met with the press about once a week. It doesn't have to be a long, long news conference, but, a formal televised news conference, but I do think it would be, it's good to ventilate the issues about once a week and have a chance to ask the question. Question to the president. I do not believe that the president ought to be expected to answer questions every day or on every event that comes down the pike. I don't think that's the job of the president. He's not the press secretary.
Well, the press was cut off from asking questions during Oval Office photo opportunities. Did you support that decision?
Well, it depends on the situation. I believe if you have a prime minister from another country who comes for a state visit and is sitting in the office, and you allow photographers to come in and take pictures, that it's not very dignified, to say the least, to have reporters crowding in and shouting questions at people. I think that there is, I don't think any White House would approve of that. I think there are other times when there are legitimate issues, pressing concern, when the press, it's more, the president ought to be available to answer questions. I do not think that it serves the president's interest, the public's interest, or anybody's interest, except possibly some hyperactive journalists who to have the president have a running commentary every day on whatever news story they want to get on the air that night. I think our president's become overexposed on television. It undercuts their ability to persuade people on important issues if you try to turn them into a Walter Cronkite every night.
Yet this president has given less press conferences than most other recent...
He has given less formal press conferences, Terry, but I think the record will also show, in fact, it's damn difficult to get anybody to print this, but he's also had, I think, while he's had, I don't know what it is, 25, 26, 27 formal press conferences, fewer than his predecessors. He has also had a lot of informal sessions, I think, well over 200 when he's answered questions. Now, these are often 10-minute things, but let me say this. I think that the record has been more uneven than I would like. I think he ought to regularize contact with the press through once-a-week press conferences.
It's been speculated that one of the reasons why he hasn't held more formal press conferences is that he sometimes doesn't come across as well and makes errors of judgment and of information. Do you think that that's, that's accurate? Do you think that that's why there haven't been as many press conferences?
Let me just say, when he was governor of California, he gave press conferences every week for 8 years. And, of course, he made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes in press conferences. But he was reelected by a healthy margin, and he left office as a popular governor.
Another criticism that some members of the Washington Press Corps have had about the current White House is that they stage many events for the media. And I don't know if you've seen it or not, but Barbara Matuso had an article in the Washington Journalism Review recently about the subject of international staged events. And she refers to his trip to Ballyporeen when he was in Ireland and quotes ABC's Sam Donaldson as saying what the point she's trying to make is that the whole trip to Ballyporeen was there for photo opportunities. It was just a staged event for public relations purposes.
Terry, can I ask you how old you are?
How old I am?
Yeah.
I'm 33.
How long have you been following the presidency? How long have you been watching our president? 15 years?
Why is that a relevant question?
Have you seen any president who has not staged events in the last 15 years? I can't remember anybody who has not made it a regular practice in the office of the presidency not to have some events which are there for in part for cameras. That's what's happened since the television age started.
Well, I think it's a question of degree that people are asking
about now. I think
it's
partly a question of degree. I think it's partly a question. One of the reasons this is getting a lot of attention is that this White House happens to be pretty good at it. It's interesting. If you remember the Mattis story in the Washington Journalism Review, she recalls, I believe, the trip to Normandy, which a lot of people said. I mean, I'm sorry, not Normandy, but into Korea when he went to the DMZ, and people said, big photo op. He's going to go stand up there at the DMZ and look out there, Commander in Chief. You know, he's going to look like the macho man up there on the line in his flak jacket with the binoculars, and the White House is really manipulating this. Within 2 hours after that event, I will tell you, I won't use the name, but we had a call from one of the leading correspondents of a network saying, that was terrific. Thank you very much for doing that. We got some fantastic pictures. It's wonderful television. We really appreciate it when you guys do events like that.
Mm-hmm.
It works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the office of the presidency is symbolic in nature. Our presidents are not just heads of government, they are also heads of state. They have to communicate through symbolism as well as through words. Of course they ought to be accountable through words. Of course they ought to answer questions. Of course they ought to be held accountable for their policies and have to talk about them. But there are other things which presidents do which have a symbolic nature. There is what some people call a civil religion in this country. And our presidents are sort of the leaders of that, and they bind us together by various kinds of activities. Does it help them politically? Of course it does. But does it serve a useful purpose? Yes, it also serves a useful purpose for the country. Some leaders are less effective at it than others. Reagan happens to be, this is one of his strengths, and that's one of the reasons he's popular. I find the kind of questions that you're driving at something which do concern people who are thoughtful, who care about public events, but that most people understand it and accept it and believe it's a regular part of the presidency, and they like a leader who leads.
Well, the point, let me read you that quote that I was getting to before.
Sure.
And this is Sam Donaldson of ABC speaking. He says, "We're captured. Take Ballyporeen in Ireland, for instance. It may have been a smash with the audience, but it was the most sterile, controlled event I've ever seen. There was absolutely no spontaneity. Nothing happened that wasn't in Deaver's script or the security man's Bible. The output was more rigidly set down than a Hollywood picture. And we, the press, become the equivalent of Hollywood directors, scriptwriters, and even cameramen. We even distribute their pictures for them. And even if we tell the audience the event has been staged, it doesn't really matter. The picture is all that counts." And later on he says, "Our options are to do nothing or to do it their way." And I guess the question that some journalists are asking now is, has the Reagan administration taken this staging of events too far and only presented the staged events and not presented enough opportunities for direct questioning with representatives of the White House of policy?
Well, as to the staging of events, good old Sam, he's a wonderful reporter. He's one of the true personalities in Washington and what sometimes is a drab city. The fact is, on Ballyporeen, if he has an objection, I believe it might be with his networks. They don't have to run that. They're under no obligation from the White House or anybody else to carry pictures from there. If they decide it's not newsworthy, they can just simply not carry it. That's their prerogative. That's what the news business is all about. I do believe that staging events is a part of the natural is a natural part of the presidency, and if done well, done helps the president govern more effectively, which I think is the bottom line. I would obviously concede the point and have been trying to make this several times, that along with the kind of symbolic events, substance is terribly, terribly important. Ultimately, it's the policies that count and their success that counts. And a president is accountable on those policies, and he ought to be willing to answer questions about them, just as other members of the administration ought to be willing to answer questions. So, yes, of course there has to be a balance. Has the balance been gone too far one way in their direction and been struck too far one way? I think that's a question worth discussing. I think there are times it might have gone a little bit too much one way. It certainly has gone too far that way for the press. There are many people in the press who, frankly, would like to have our president subjected to questions day in, day out. They'll not be satisfied until they put a camera in the Oval Office and watch everything he does. I don't think you can run a White House that way. I don't think a president can be effective if he has to answer questions every day from the press and be out. That is not his. I want to come back to that. That's why presidents have press secretaries. Of course there's going to be a staging of events, and of course they ought to answer questions.
President Reagan does have a background as an actor in Hollywood. Is his acting skills something that the public relations experts at the White House have tried to use in developing his image and his way of presenting information
sure.
to the public?
The man's very terribly comfortable around the camera. You'd be a fool to sort of think, well, you ought to turn your back on that. It's very interesting what's happening now on the Democratic side. I was watching television the other night after the Mondale debate, and someone, a Mondale supporter, said, "Why, my goodness, Mondale's got some Hollywood in him. Isn't that wonderful?" Which was very interesting. But, isn't it interesting the way that many people are now saying about Mondale, isn't he a better candidate than we thought because he's got more charisma. He's got more ability to communicate than we thought. He did it with more style on Sunday night than we ever thought he had. He's no longer the wooden candidate. Style counts in politics. It is not something we should say in a democracy when, after all, what's important is to build public support, marshal public support behind programs. We don't want people in the office who can't command public respect and communicate with them. They're just not going to be very effective. We should have, if there's anything we should have learned from the Carter presidency, it's when a president no longer commands public attention and public support, it becomes very difficult to govern.
So you're saying then that emphasis on image isn't necessarily a superficial emphasis. It's important to maintain the confidence of the American public through that positive image.
Absolutely. One of the things, just give you the contrast. Remember when Carter went out jogging one day up Camp David and he fell?
Mm-hmm.
And there was this picture of him that came out from that. It hurt him badly as a leader. Because people had this sense of him as being something they didn't, they couldn't follow as easily. It was something that was really distressing to a lot of people. The Carter White House went nuts over it because they realized what kind of damage it would do to them and the kind of sense of the man that they wanted to portray. I worked for President Ford, and he had this same problem, as you recall. Remember when he had some stumbles on a ski slope and he bumped his head on helicopters a few times?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody suddenly thought he was a stumble bum. The man happened to be very athletic and graceful, but it was that sense of him stumbling that became the a symbol of who he was to a lot of people, and it hurt him in terms of his ability to lead. And we had to look for ways to convince people that he really knew what he was doing. He was on top of a lot of substantive issues, and that he knew, he had a grasp of the presidency.
What do you think of Mondale's image and how his public relations experts have been presenting him?
Well, let's come back to one thing. Ultimately, it's the public relations experts, as you say. You sort of present this. I mean, a lot of your questions have suggested that this is all manipulation by the PR experts and the candidate or the president, whoever he is, a Mondale or a Reagan, sort of dangling at the end of a string. That's not what happens. A staff can help a president or a candidate reinforce things about his personality. They can't change it. We're not talking about malleable people who are totally manipulated by the staff. That's just not reality. What happens is that a guy like Mondale, there are certain aspects of his personality which he's had trouble conveying on television, and they've tried to find ways to help him with that. He himself had a very revealing interview with Matt Greenfield in the Washington Post about 3 or 4 weeks ago about the fact that when he's one-on-one or with a small group, he can be effective, or talking with a print reporter, but when he goes on television, he's not very effective, and it worries him because he realizes that's the modern medium that a lot of people have to, people who govern have to govern through. And his advisors have been trying to figure out ways that he could be more effective, and they obviously hit on a good strategy Sunday night. And part of that strategy was, in the debate, to act presidential. There had been a whine in a lot of his voice and a lot of the things he'd done before. They got the whine out of there. He did. And they put him, made him, helped him to settle down a little bit and to be more himself, and he was more effective.
A lot of people are saying now, well, look, you know, the presidential elections are becoming like the packaging, marketing, and selling of soap. Do you think that that's a valid criticism to make?
I think that they have moved too far in that direction. And I think they began moving that in that direction with the advent of television. You'll recall, you know, some of the advertisements. And so there's a new book out on presidential or political advertising tracing this back, and it shows that, you know, there's been a high degree of consistency between the ways the various campaigns conduct themselves through television with advertising and soap suds. That comparison comes readily to mind. There was a book written on the Nixon campaign in '68 called The Packaging of the President, which made that analogy. What we need in that situation is to find a balance between substance and some of this packaging that's become so inevitable. I think we need to find things like debates. Frankly, I would like to see the networks and radio give time to the candidates to talk to the country about their plans, hopes, and dreams, and to take off some of the and to reduce the amount of advertising that they feel is necessary. In other words, I think if in England the parties are given a certain amount of time on television to present their case before an election, and I think that'd be a healthy thing here in this country. So we'd have more substance in these campaigns. Mm-hmm. I will have to tell you that one of the problems has been in the way that television covers campaigns. There is all the studies that have been made on the way television covers it is show that basically there is a lot more emphasis on hoopla, as they call it, the horse race, who's ahead, who's behind, who's trying to do what strategically or tactically, you know, what little gambit is each side coming up with now, than on the issues. I think that the networks have done a better job this year on the issues than before. There's been more balance this year, but traditionally there has been a lot more emphasis on hoopla than the issues. It runs about 2-1 hoopla over issues in the coverage, and I think that's been a problem. I think that has. I think the American people deserve more serious discussion, and I think that they would tune into it.
Why did you leave the Reagan White House? You resigned in January of '84.
Oh, just a whole series of things. I basically had this was my third administration, and I had come in originally with the understanding I'd stay for 6 months, and so I overstayed my welcome by 2.5 years. I stayed for 3 years, but it was time to move on. I'd been through 3 White Houses and 3 national political campaigns, and I just thought it was time for change.
Okay, one last question. Do you think that the techniques being used currently by the Reagan White House, which I think most people agree are pretty state-of-the-art in terms of presenting information and public relations, do you think that those techniques will be adapted by future presidents and by other world leaders? I mean, do you think that this is the direction we're heading in?
You say that with some dismay. The degree to which the Reagan White House has engaged in consistent forward planning and tried to be look ahead and figure out what message it wanted to get out, how it wanted to persuade and build public support, will be emulated by future administrations. Jody Powell has just written a book, as you know, it came out a few months ago, about his experience as Carter press secretary, and the final chapter concludes that, in retrospect, he wishes they had done things the way the Reagan group had done it, because there are lessons to be learned from the way Reagan has done it. But these are not, and I would argue with you to my last breath, that these kind of techniques, not in all cases, but in most cases, serve good government. I was just overseas here not long ago and called into the office of a major figure in an overseas government, and he was asked, how does Reagan do it? We'd like to figure it out. There are things about Reagan and Reagan's approach to communications which obviously make sense in other democracies. Yes, I do think other governments are interested.
Okay, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Good talking to you.
Okay,
right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.